Cordy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast, exploring life stories through travel. I'm Lisa Francesca Nand. A rather hungover conversation one morning in Dublin between two best friends led to the creation of a lovable character called Aisling, who quickly became a Facebook phenomenon, and then a best-selling book, and then another one, and is now becoming a film. On this episode, we explore the quirks of life in every small town, moving to the big city, the wild days of the Irish Celtic Tiger, crazy nights in Berlin, even crazier ones in Las Vegas, and so much more. Joining me for a delightful conversation are co-authors Sarah Breen and Emma McLysett.
This is the first time I've ever had two people to interview at the same time. So we're huddling around my recording device here in the offices of Penguin on the Strand in London. And why don't you introduce yourselves first of all?
I'm Emma McLysett.
And I'm Sarah Breen. And we are friends and co-authors of what is now a series of books around Aisling. So the first book is called Oh My God, What a Complete Aisling. The second book is called The Importance of Being Aisling.
And both have just come out here in the UK, and they're both out in our native Ireland as well.
Not just out, but you've hit the number one slot in Ireland, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a kind of a phenomenon in Ireland. We were the best-selling Irish book in the country last year. And then this year, when the second book came out, the success really took everyone by surprise. And at the moment, both books are back in the top five in Ireland. So it's been incredible because we get to work together and we hang out together all the time. We have travelled together. So it's like we've turned our friendship sort of into a career, which is like amazing.
I know. We even on our way here this morning, we were kind of thinking about people sitting in offices and going, God, that used to be us. And look at us now.
Yeah, not so long ago, I might add, yeah. Like a year ago.
What an absolute dream come true. What gave you the idea to start writing a book together?
Well, we actually came up with a character who's the centre of the book about 10 years ago. As Sarah said, we've been friends for a long time. We went to college together. And we just one day hungover, sitting around in blankets under the flat we used to share in a little place called Stony Batter in Dublin. We came up with this character called Aisling. And she was kind of like an Irish everywoman, or just kind of an everywoman. So we were thinking about, why were these girls with these traits? And the first trait we came up with was, who are the people who buy brown mascara?
why is that industry going? And then we decided that the people who buy brown mascara are also the people who are still buying bootcut jeans, because a Weight Watchers leader once told them they were slimming.
Very slimming. A dark bootcut is fabulous for the figure.
They have come back in though.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, if it's you cyclical. Wore
them, Aisling's delighted.
Yeah. If you wore them the first time round, it kind of feels weird wearing them again.
Yeah. As I get older and the trends start to come back, I'm like, nope, I can't do chokers again. I did it in the 90s. I'm not doing it now.
Yeah. I've been tempted by a choker this week. I'm thinking about one for New Year's Eve.
You could pull it off.
I could not pull it off. I don't have the neck for it.
but it hides a multitude of sins.
It does. You need a nice long,
really big choker. Anyway, I digress.
So the other traits we came up with was, so there's a fancy department store in Dublin called Brown Thomas.
I know it.
So Aisling would definitely buy something in Brown Thomas, probably a Clinique special offer.
Something with a free gift. So you get the value.
And then she would keep the Brown Thomas bag to bring her lunch to work in because she's just so fancy. And then the Brown Thomas bag would probably last about 6 months until the Clinique product had run out.
Yes, and she needed to reinvest. And it has those little rope handles. You'd nearly pay for the bag.
You nearly would. And you'd keep it nice and clean, and her Tupperware is in there.
And then we just kept talking about Aisling, like, oh, well, Aisling has definitely never dyed her hair. Why would you? She has a million loyalty cards on her keyring because it's basically like free money. So we decided Aisling is like this sensible friend that we wish we had. And then when we explained the concept of Aisling to our friends in our wider circles, everyone was like, oh yeah, I sit beside Aisling and work, or, you know, I know an Aisling from home or whatever. And this was 10 years ago. So we, you know, didn't do anything because that's classic us.
We're incredibly lazy.
Yeah. But Emma made a Facebook page so we could share all our little Aislingisms, and it slowly and organically grew. We now have like 50,000 members in it, and we've had to kind of close it off because it was getting sort of crazy in there.
Yeah.
And then we were approached by an Irish publisher who said, look, we really like this character. She's so relatable. Everyone seems to love her. Would you consider doing a book? And we were like, oh, God, effort. but then, you know, we'd always wanted to work together. My background, we were both in the media. My background's magazines, and then Emer was in radio and then online journalism. So we were like, okay, best case scenario, it's an opportunity for us to work together.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, we make an absolute show of ourselves.
We were mostly concerned with not making a show of ourselves.
Yeah.
And the publisher, we think, probably wanted us to do kind of a gift book, kind of a compendium of funny Aislingisms. But Sarah and I didn't really want to throw away 10 years of a character on something quite so throwaway, really. So we came back to them with the idea for a novel.
And meanwhile, we were Googling, have two people ever written a novel together?
How to write a novel, you know, what is a plot?
And they said, okay, yeah, put together a plot for us and we'll see what we think. So the night before it was due, we went to the pub with a laptop and just put together a very loose plot. And that became the plot for our first book. Oh my God, what a complete action.
Yeah, and we wrote it thinking really nobody would ever read it. As you do. I mean, you can't project how successful something like this might be. And we really had no idea if what we had written was any good. But it turns out that people loved it.
A lot of people loved it, yeah.
You probably ruined the life of Aislings all over Ireland, though. A bit like my friend has a child called Alexa, and she was really annoyed when the whole Alexa.
I can understand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it was quite a really cool, you know, yeah, she was really pleased with that name.
Yeah, Aisling's a popular name in Ireland.
Yeah, you've probably ruined people's lives in a nice way.
For the most part, people are quite happy about it, I think.
Everyone seems very, very fond of her. You know, she's a bit of a square, our Aisling, but there's a lot of heart to her. She's that friend, like, as I said, that we wish we were a bit more like. Yeah.
A lot of feedback we get when people have read the books are that they miss her and that they've spent so much time with her in reading the books and then she's gone and they're like, oh, where is she? Bring her back.
That's a real sign of a great book is when you miss the characters.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and I can really.
Yeah. And actually, I kind of miss her when we stop writing the books as well, even though it's stressful and we always leave it to the last minute and then we've deadlines coming. And
we're actually turning the first book into a film at the moment. We're working.
Amazing.
I know. We're so chuffed. We're working with an Irish production company called Element Pictures who have been like really successful in the past. They produced Room, which Brie Larson won an Oscar for. So they are, you know, to have their support and they're sort of holding our hands through the whole process because we've never done script writing before. So, yeah, that's been a bit of a challenge, but we're getting there.
So tell me about, obviously this is about travel, so tell me about Aisling, because she comes from a small town in Ireland. And to anyone not living in Ireland, Ireland is probably one of the most sought after places for people to visit in the world. So this is, you know, this is travel. Tell me about where she lives.
She lives in, the town where she lives is called Ballygobard and it's fictitious, but it's sort of based on where I grew up and a little bit on where Emer grew up. I'm sure you have them in the UK. It's one of these one horse towns with like a main street. Got a Chinese about 10 years ago, which is very exciting.
Got an ATM.
Yeah, everybody knows everybody. You know, there's two schools and like 500 pubs. And she had a very sort of rural, idyllic upbringing where she used to catch frogs and hedgehogs and all the rest of it. And then she sort of has an opportunity then to move up to Dublin and she kind of wants to sample the more sophisticated city life. And she does, and things change for her.
Dublin is one of my favourite cities in the world. It's so expensive, though. Even like living here in London, Dublin is just so expensive.
It's very comparable. Very comparable with London. And at the moment, it's changing very rapidly. We're building a lot of hotels over there now because tourism is just off the charts and it's so valuable. But there are obviously repercussions on the people who actually live there, and Airbnb is kind of strangling the renters, so it's become sort of difficult.
Actually kind of look at that issue of renting and, you know, shortage of properties in the importance of being Aisling, kind of, you know, from Aisling's point of view and her friend's point of view, in terms of we can't find anywhere to live, we're having to move down home, which is a thing that's happening a lot in Ireland because people are moving back in with their parents.
And Aisling's very lucky because she does have that safety net, and we would be from similar situation as well. Like, my parents still live in the country and I know if anything happened I could always move down with them, but there are so many people who live in Dublin who don't have that.
And the aftermath of the Celtic Tiger sort of changed things a lot, because traditionally you've got Irish young people moving away, haven't you? From the potato famine onwards, and, you know, people going to find a new life in the new world, and people coming to America and England and Scotland. And after the whole boom of the Celtic Tiger, which is amazing, I was there and
it was
watching.
Insane.
It was insane.
We were at the height of our, not that, well, we were just starting our media careers, I think, at the time, and it was just like every night you could go out and you'd be legging free drinks everywhere, and then the recession came and it wasn't quite so much fun.
How would you describe the Celtic Tiger for someone who hasn't heard of it? It was the big boom that happened just before the bust.
It was a massive boom. Everybody suddenly had so much money. The banks were giving away like 110% mortgages. People were being encouraged to, why buy one house when you could also buy an apartment in Bulgaria? Meanwhile, there was no flights from Dublin to Bulgaria.
Yeah, you couldn't even get from Dublin to Bulgaria easily. And people were just buying apartments off plan, going, oh, well, I have all this money that the banks are giving me. Like, people were taking helicopters, crazy places.
At one point, Ireland had the highest ownership of helicopters in the world. Like, it's tiny. Inexplicably, it's tiny. Like, why drive when we were reading a really funny Twitter thread about this recently. And there were builders, obviously, and all tradesmen did very well at this time. And apparently there was some pub in rural Ireland that used to go through like a pallet of champagne a week, because builders would come in and drink a bottle of champagne in 2 pint glasses. People were just like buying new clothes at the weekend, just throwing them in the bin. New clothes. So yeah, we were at the height of our media career.
Like, we weren't making any money, but...
No, and we certainly weren't saving any money. That was the thing. Nobody saved a penny.
Everyone paid massive rents. Nobody saved a penny. Everyone had a great time. And then it all came crashing down.
The company I worked for briefly produced a travel magazine called First Class, which was just dedicated to first class travel, because that's what people were doing. Now, it seems insane now. We're all back in Ryanair.
It was probably all on credit card, wasn't it?
Everything was on credit.
Yeah. Everyone had very extravagant kitchens.
Like, there was decking everywhere.
Decking was a big thing.
Cocaine all over the country.
Cocaine off the decking. Yeah. Very useful with those grooves.
Patio heaters, like heating the air. Heating
hot
the air.
Hot tubs, I imagine, were everywhere.
Yeah. Every garden centre suddenly had a hot tub section.
So you can kind of sort of see the aftermath, can't you? You can almost visualise the empty hot tubs. Well, we all know. Rotting decking.
The decking,
you know,
is so slippery now. Everyone is putting in claims.
Nobody varnished it properly or treated it.
And so things seem to be looking up, though, don't they? I mean, we've moved out of that really deep part of the aftermath.
The worldwide recession was bad, and the housing crash and everything. But yeah, Dublin is really, really expensive for the people who live there. It's quite difficult because rents are so high, and you know, incomes haven't really changed to reflect that. So it's,
and Irish people are obsessed with owning property. And it's very difficult to buy property at the moment. There's just a massive housing shortage. There's just not enough houses to go around. There's no social housing being built. And meanwhile, every Airbnb is jammed and the place is filled with tourists.
So a bit similar what's happening in Barcelona as well. And, you know, there were those sort of anti-tourist protests last summer and the summer before. But when you go to Dublin, it's such a great night out. But it is like a party central. And I can imagine those sort of central areas around Temple Bar and everything where people... It's just amazing. You know, you need a holiday to get over it if you like going out and drinking and socialising like I do. But, you know, for the people that are living there, that's like... You know, quite difficult to wake up when you've got to go to work and everyone's, you know.
Sometimes you'd be unlucky enough to have to walk through Temple Bar on the way to work and you're just kind of picking your way through vomit and seagulls eating old chips. Yeah. And it can be quite
the seagulls, I have a theory that the seagulls in Dublin are the biggest in the world because they just...
They're terrifying.
They're terrifying. They're huge. They're known for stealing entire meals out of people's hands.
It's the same thing in Brighton there, actually. I once saw some woman terrorised by a seagull that was chasing her baby in the pram down the road. And
the baby probably had an ice cream or something.
It probably did.
I feel like the dog.
Or a dummy or something.
I feel like seagulls were brought up in the Dáil, which is the Irish Parliament, last summer because they were such a problem.
We have to do something. We have to put a net over the country.
A bit like developing some sort of seagull misomatosis that they develop for
Myxomatosis.
Kill them off. Yeah. That's a good idea.
I have no idea how we got to the seagulls, but the small town that Aisling is from, those tiny towns are all over Ireland. And actually, I think there are more of them there than here, because there are places, even though it's such a small country, there are places that are so rural, and the roads, you know, it looks like it's not going to take you a long time to get there, but actually, you know, by the
infrastructure isn't there to back it up.
Which is great, because you know, it's good not to have these dirty great big motorways sort of cutting through everything, but it does take you an age to get anywhere that's out of like the sort of main, you know, beaten track.
And you can get stuck behind a tractor
or sheep or a flock of sheep.
That's what makes it so beautiful as well. Describe to me some of these tiny little villages.
Well, where we're from, we're sort of in the east of the country, which has been branded the Ancient East for tourism purposes.
Ireland's very good at rebranding its areas for tourism purposes.
Yeah. It's not like Rome. I mean, not so far.
It's almost like Rome. It's very green. And where I'm from in Carlow, we have a lovely mountain range called the Blackstairs Mountains, which is very pretty. And I grew up in this little village where there's like loads of granite walls, and it's now, I realise, it's a Georgian village. At the time I didn't appreciate it because I was like, it's so boring, but now I come home a lot and we have like a stately home, kind of like a manor house.
You do?
Oh, I don't. I mean, me as a townsperson.
The town has one.
She grew up in the shadow of the manor house.
Yeah. But now it's, they have weddings there and music festivals and stuff, and there's another hotel in the town now. The village where I'm from is called Boris, and it has now become Boris.
Like Boris Johnson.
With two R's, yeah. But it's become like the wedding capital of Ireland because of the two venues. So now people I know in Dublin who have never set foot in Carlow before are talking about like going down to Boris for weekends. Yeah, very, very pretty, like beautiful views. Boris has a viaduct as well, which was built in Roman times or whatever.
ancient days.
And where Emer's from, Kildare, is a bit flatter.
Yeah, I'm from Kildare, which is kind of a county between Carlow and Dublin. Commuter distance to Dublin, but it's very, the village where I'm near is called Kill, K-I-L-L, and Kildare is a horse racing county, so we're famous for producing Grand National winners and thoroughbreds. But those little villages, like the village where, well, I grew up in the deep countryside, but the village where I'm from nearby, like, has more pubs than anything else, which is a real, I don't know if it's the same in the UK.
No, not at all. No, it's very different, and that's lovely about Ireland. I mean, there is hopefully a village pub, sometimes two in small villages, but nothing like Ireland.
No, we'd need multiples of that now.
That's the best thing about it.
Yeah. It is. It's nice to go from the
top
of the
You'll often in Ireland only know you're driving through a village when you see a pub. And obviously the local people know it's a village, and they know that down there might be a bit of a shop, or there might be, you know,
a decorative pump.
Paddy Joe selling tea bags at the back of his pub or whatever. But it's the pub where you know, okay, this is the village. Yeah. I've hit the spot now.
I can stop here and get out of the car and have
the sat nav is like, I don't know. But you're like, well, the pub knows.
And I imagine, like, Aisling, and like many people growing up in small towns, we can all relate to that in a certain way. You tried to get out as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now Aisling is a bit of a home bird. So she was, you know, making the exit wasn't always on her mind, whereas it sort of was for me. I know when I moved to Dublin for college, and I knew I wasn't going to go back home. And as I said, now I can really appreciate the village where I'm from. So when I go down the weekends, and I really enjoy the slower pace of life, I enjoy that everybody knows everybody's business, because it's got a community vibe. But Aisling, yeah, she...
A big Aisling trait would be going down home for the weekend.
Every single weekend.
Yeah, every weekend, getting the public transport or driving the little micro down the motorway or whatever, and then taking off the windy roads. Going down home would be very important to her. So for our Aisling in the books, the journey between down home and Dublin is very important and kind of symbolic of the journey she makes through the books, if that's not too sappy.
Yeah.
And she travels further afield as well, doesn't she?
She travels quite a lot.
We were discussing this over breakfast this morning. She likes to go on her holiday, you know, one or two holidays a year, because that's what everybody does. She likes a good deal as well, so she'd be looking in on Groupon and those for her weekends away. But we were in at the hotel having breakfast this morning. We were just laughing about, you know, when Aisling goes to a hotel, she'll check every drawer and every cupboard in the place to make sure that she's not missing any amenity. Then she will have brought her own stash of tea bags, so she'll make her own cup of tea.
You can't be trusting foreign tea.
Yeah. And then the hotel breakfast would be a huge source of pleasure for her. So if she's paid for a hotel breakfast, even if she's at a wedding the night before, even if she's been out till 6 a.m, she is not missing that hotel breakfast.
It's a crime to Aisling to miss a hotel breakfast. You know, the people who are like, oh, I'd prefer the extra hour of sleep. Aisling is like, you'll sleep when you're dead, get up and have the sausages.
They might have a pancake machine. You just don't know.
I was once at a hen party in a hotel in Athlone, which is in the Midlands of Ireland, and they had a pancake machine, and I've never quite gotten over it.
I've been to 5-star hotels all over the world because of my job, and I've never seen a pancake machine.
It just spits out pancakes.
It's just amazing. Yeah, or like a waffle machine, you know, you turn it over.
Yeah.
And she would really enjoy all the tiny pastries, and she might siphon off a Nutella in her handbag.
She definitely would.
I think she is all of us, isn't she?
Well, this is it. Yeah. And it's the same with the toiletries. I mean, you can't have enough shower caps.
No.
Or tiny shampoos and conditioners. Or sewing kits. For the next time you go somewhere. And like, what a bonus if you have like a dental kit or something.
Yeah.
So she ends up in two different
She goes to Tenerife.
She goes to Tenerife.
And she goes to Berlin.
Classic package holiday.
And she goes to Berlin in the first book. And her trip to Berlin is as a result of her her new life. So in the first book, oh my God, wouldn't it be Aisling, she moves to Dublin and makes friends with these kind of hipster girls who are lovely, but kind of show her a new way of life. and they take her to Berlin, and she's there practicing her kind of her junior cert German, or her, I guess it would be GCSE German, and you
with
know,
her guidebook and everything. And they're like, "Oh no, we're going to a
we're going clubbing. Like the club doesn't open until 3 a.m. And Aisling's like, "What?
But the Berlin Wall, what?
The Reichstag, my guidebook,
the Hard Rock Cafe. I need to pick up a T-shirt. I need some fridge magnets."
Is this because you've been to Berlin? Did you go to Berlin to research it?
We went to Berlin separately, like at various different times, but we never had an experience like Aisling has in Berlin, where she goes to a techno club and she takes a pill.
Yeah, it's she really goes for it.
Yeah,
as she thinks she's going for
all
it.
All is not what it seems.
Yeah,
it transpires.
It's a lot of people say it's one of their favourite moments in the book because it's just it's really funny.
If you ever send her back there in a future book, the Kit Kat Club is the weirdest in Berlin. It was the weirdest club I've ever been to in my life. It's an S&M club just outside of town. But I didn't go there knowing that. That's what I was going to. So it was quite a surprise.
It sounds like you might have had kind of an Aisling experience.
It was, yeah. It was, absolutely. It sounds very similar.
Decided that, like, pushing her out of her comfort zone, we get great comedy and mileage out of it. So in the second book, we sent her to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And again, we've been to Las Vegas separately, not together. And
very funny pooling our separate experiences of Vegas into this one Aisling experience. And I mean, it would be a big Aisling or Irish gal thing to go kind of four of them off to Vegas for a long weekend or whatever.
You might do a helicopter tour of the Grand Canyon, then go to San Francisco and fly home. And it's a nice deal.
Yeah.
But she gets very enamored with the all-you-can-eat breakfast, all-you-can-eat buffet.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're famous for them in Vegas, and it's crazy the value that you can get. Yeah. And you can have the add-ons for the all-you-can-eat.
She accidentally orders an $80 fruit bowl.
This is based on my actual experience. Like, you know, when you go to Vegas and you just lose the run of yourself, you act like a Rockefeller and you're gambling, and suddenly you think you're Paris Hilton. And I woke up one day in the hotel, and I've never, like, normally when I'm hungover, I want something beige and salty, but I was just so parched and so thirsty. And my friend Kira was like, "You know what I'd really like? I'd like some, like, cold fruit." I was like, "Yes, cold fruit. That sounds amazing." So she found a fruit bowl on the room service menu. I mean, how expensive can a fruit bowl be? So we ordered it and wilted all down. It was mostly melon, which is the ultimate filler fruit, and apple. I think there might have been two strawberries.
What an insult.
I know.
Was there even a bit of pineapple?
Maybe like one piece.
Not even a couple of blueberries.
Oh, not a hope.
A superfood, are you mad? Anyway, we got the bill and it was $85.
For fruit.
Yeah. But it's Vegas. You're paying $200 for blow dry. Like, why is it off an $85 fruit bowl?
I think anyone who's been to Vegas has a Vegas story like that. Yes. It is a crazy place. And you lose sense of time because unless you're going outside, you know, you can walk around inside from hotel to hotel to hotel
That's what struck me the most the time I was in Vegas. I was just like, you can be in Vegas and never go outside.
Yeah.
But yet experience almost all of it. It's absolutely mad.
And the fact that everybody is there on a mad one and you're all sort of in it together. Yeah. Like, you just meet the most random people in hotel bars, in lifts, and and you have to, it has to be done, and you have to really go for it.
Yeah, we really enjoyed sending Aisling to Vegas.
Yeah.
It's a shame you didn't go together to do the research. You need to get onto that.
We still might.
Yeah, we still might.
We've done a bit of travelling together, though.
Yeah, we went camping in France earlier this summer.
Yeah, as if we don't do enough together already, we decided to go on holidays together.
We handed in our second book and was like, "Oh, now let's go on holidays together." That was fun. I mean, it was early May, so it rained the whole time.
Yeah.
But I think that you kind of have to experience sitting in a mobile home in France in the lashing rain.
Trying to entertain small children. Yeah.
I haven't done it with small children. I've done it without small children, and I've been the small child being entertained. Yeah. All my family holiday trips were to France at that age.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a rite of passage.
It is a rite of passage,
But as long as you've got a box of wine, I think
there was one night, because there was a group of us there, and, you know, there was more adults than children, so there was enough of us to look after children. But I remember, you know, they have those, like, campsite discos at, like, 8 p.m, and the adults were like, "Yeah, let's get into this," with our box of wine. The children were like, "Can we go home now? You're embarrassing us."
The giant mascot was making some pretty rude gestures. unkid-friendly.
I love it that you have a box of wine as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a bottle, is it?
Well,
it's
we're all being very more environmentally conscious now.
Yeah, that's it.
I would have to...
It's not that it's 5 litres in a box.
I would have to question whether the box made out of cardboard is more environmentally friendly than the bottles, but I don't know. I guess that
wasn't
the point.
I don't want to even think about that.
No, we already feel bad about drinking 5 litres of wine.
Don't make you think about the environment while you're doing it.
We've also, I lived in the US for a while and Emer came out to visit me a couple of times, and we've also had some pretty memorable times driving around.
We did a great road trip from Phoenix in Arizona to San Diego.
Maybe six or seven hours.
6 or 7 hours, yeah. So not too long, but long enough to play all the games we could think of. I almost got into trouble at the one thing Sarah had told me was, don't forget your passport to get into California. You really need that, you know, they want your ID.
They have guns, Emer.
They have guns, yeah. And we got to the border, and where was the passport? Couldn't find it. I don't have it. What are we going to do? The guard was not impressed by our Irish charm.
Yeah. And as soon as I see somebody, like, you know, in a uniform with a gun, I just, like, my urge to confess things that I haven't even done is so strong. And then I
got drugs in the back.
I frisked me, like, you wouldn't know, I could be packing. And then, yeah. So
I did eventually locate
the passport. I act very shifty as well. And I just don't know what comes over me.
Sweating, going, I had it a minute ago.
Am I up to something?
Hang on, I've never driven into California. I've driven out of California.
They don't care if you're leaving.
I don't even remember seeing a border.
It's the proximity to the Mexican border. That's what the problem is.
Yeah. Well, they're very interested in your fruit and veg supplies.
Oh, yeah.
How much it costs.
Yeah. Well, just like, have you got any on you?
Are you hungry?
I'm smuggling in a carriage.
They think you're bringing in diseases into their
precious
across their invisible border. That trip was great. We kind of randomly picked a hotel in San Diego because it was good value, and they ended up having their own seals. They had a little seal colony kind of just outside the lobby of the hotel. We couldn't believe our eyes. We were like, how have we managed to hit the jackpot here?
It was the cutest thing ever. And it's on those trips that we sort of did a lot of our chat about Aisling, and just, you know, we never thought it was going to go anywhere.
What were you doing in the States anyway before the road trip?
And my then boyfriend, now husband, was doing a work assignment. He got the opportunity to go there for 3.5 years, and I was working in magazines at the time, and I was kind of had my feel of it. I was working at a teen magazine title, just getting constant emails about, like, vaginal discharge. And it was time for me to finish up there. So
did they arrest that guy that kept sending you those emails?
It was allegedly a teenage girl. But it was good. We were in a good position to move, so it was an opportunity I just had to take. And Emer was one of my... A couple of people came to visit me once, but she came twice.
I came twice.
That's how
Where were you living?
I was in Phoenix. You came to Phoenix both times.
Yeah.
Phoenix, Arizona, and we lived in Portland, Oregon for a while as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Did you see that Portlandia? Was it called Portlandia?
Yeah.
It was really funny. Just
the
opening
titles
were really very funny because it is kind of like that, sort of hippie. And
it very much
stuck
is.
In the 90s.
Everything's covered in birds.
Yeah. It's a really nice city, though. And before I went to the States, I'd completely underestimated it. I don't know, you just think about New York, Florida, but that whole, like, West Coast is so beautiful. And when we moved from Portland down to Arizona, we did drive the whole way down the 101, and we had a dog with us, which is kind of annoying, but we drove through, like, wine country, and they have, like, the redwoods up there as well. America has everything that all the other countries have, I feel, and they have really good, like, national parks, and they take really good care of them, and the facilities are great. You know, you can go there and camp, and you can have a campfire. In Ireland, we're very much against campfires.
Yeah,
and barbecuing and things like that, whereas they're like, take advantage of the parks.
People, you know, take the mickey out of Americans for a lot of them not having passports, obviously. A lot do as well, but I forget what the proportion is now, but they used to say something like 40 or 50%.
Yeah, it's really hard,
but it's such a huge country.
Exactly. there's so much to see with everything, with every
single landscape from snow to desert.
Yeah.
I was just visiting a friend in New York, and she was talking about, she had been invited to LA for a New Year's Eve party, and I was like, are you going to go? And she said, no, it's further away to go to LA than it is to travel home to Ireland. Like, it's not a short jaunt on a plane. Like, it's a long haul flight. And I was like, I hadn't really thought about it that way.
Yeah, we do forget that sometimes.
We've actually done a lot of travelling around Ireland in the past year doing book promotion, and we've done a lot of interviews.
A lot of literary festivals. So we spent a lot of time in the car last summer, which we had a fabulous summer in Ireland, as you guys had it as well here.
And literary festivals tend to happen in kind of well-to-do coastal towns where they have a lot of boats. So we spent a lot of time in really nice, really nice towns and villages in places like Cork and Kerry, rather, which are just beautiful.
West and southwest of the country. They're so beautiful down there.
I'm so glad you got good weather, because the only time I've been, like, way out west was Connemara and Galway and that sort of thing. And even though the beaches were amazing. Yes. They were like, they looked like Caribbean beaches, some of them. You just would not go near one. This is August.
But they called,
it was sunny and beautiful as they well. Called it wasn't that, even raining. It was
the Irish
sunny.
Tourism Board called that the Wild Atlantic Way, and they call it that for a reason.
It is wild over there.
It is wild. You can drive from kind of the tip of Northern Ireland down through Donegal and down into Galway and down to Cork, and that's the Wild Atlantic Way, and the beaches are fantastic.
Do you feel that emotional connection to Ireland, like a lot of people who haven't even been there, actually, some of them, you know, feel?
I think I do. And it's as I get older, I appreciate it so much more. Mm. Because I'm from the countryside, greenery, trees, mountains used to just bore me. And I used to want to, you know, be in the city and be anonymous and all that rest of it. But now, you know, when we're down in Kerry and Kinsale and places like that, just the scenery is breathtaking.
It's so beautiful.
And it's so unique to Ireland as well. Like, you just tell it's Ireland. And I can see why it's so popular.
Even when I go home now to where my mother lives, the house I grew up in is just in the countryside in Kildare, and it's just so beautiful and quiet and green.
And it changes so much with the seasons when you're driving around, you know. When you live in a city, you don't really notice the season so much. But when you're driving down to Kildare, like the trees.
I love Ireland now, I must say. I was just in New York, as I said, and I visited Ellis Island, which is where immigrants would have come through from like the early 20th century to the middle of the 20th century. And there's a lot, they've done such a good job in recreating images and kind of sounds. And I actually got quite emotional walking around because I was able to see so many Irish people who'd gone through Ellis Island, and just the chance that they were taking such a chance to leave everything behind and come to this, you know, brave new world and set up lives for themselves. You could almost pick the Irish people out of, because obviously people from all over the world came through Ellis Island, but you could pick out the Irish people, like, from a country mile. I was like, they're Irish, I can tell.
And then if you go to the Tenement Museum as well in New York, you can see where they all ended up and how they lived.
You could just imagine the fear and trepidation and the sadness at leaving your family.
Yeah.
And yet also I'm guessing that many people would have had a feeling of excitement and going off to find somewhere new. But it is quite awesome, you know, when you think of the emotions and the enormity that involved, you know, crossing the sea and for many people never ever coming back, never seeing their family again.
I mean, people are still doing it today. I mean,
there was a huge wave in the 80s as well.
Huge wave in the 80s.
Everyone sort of Irish has an aunt in
Queens. Yeah, and I have like lots of cousins who would have gone over to work on building sites in New York. And then with the more recent recession, there was quite a big kind of outflux of emigrants from Ireland who came to the UK or went again to New York. Australia is a big place that Irish people go to. They have a good visa system, so, you know, it's quite welcoming to Irish people.
Yeah, a lot of nurses.
Everyone's welcoming to Irish people. They're loved. Some of my best friends are Irish, and my mum's, we did a DNA test. She's 40% Irish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know if Irish people are too welcome in the US at the moment, but...
Why is that?
Just...
Because of Trump.
Yeah, immigration in general. I don't think it's as appealing as it used to be, whereas Australia and Canada now are big destinations.
Yeah, Canada's a big destination.
Dubai, like the Middle East, is another one where
Irish young people Ireland exports really good teachers and nurses. So Dubai is a big pull for teachers and nurses.
And there's so much money to be made out there.
Tax-free a lot of the time.
Compared to here.
Yeah, very low taxes. I don't know what the taxes are actually. Right, you know, we said this at the beginning, but you are really living the dream. You're best friends, you've written best-selling books together, and you've got a film coming out. Yes. What's next? I mean, what's the plan?
Well, we are contracted to do a third Aisling book, which will be out next year. So that is a big focus for us.
Yeah. Aisling has travelled across to the UK. So Michael Joseph publishes the Aisling books here in the UK. And it's been amazing to think that something so Irish has travelled across the Irish Sea and kind of... She was called the Irish Bridget Jones in The Guardian, which we like clung on to. We were like, yeah, we'll take
that.
Yeah,
I think that sounds great. It's also travelled outside of Ireland and the UK. We just last week got a book deal for Serbia. It's going to be in the Czech Republic. It's where Germany.
Korea.
Yeah. So good luck to the people translating it in those far-flung places because it's pretty tricky.
Yeah, you must pinch yourself.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we were nominated for Best Newcomer in the Irish Book Awards last year, and now this year we're nominated in the popular fiction category, which is a huge leap, and just to be known as popular is amazing. So
we've managed to meet so many of our heroes. So one of our big joint hero would have been Marion Keyes, and we would have shared her books as we were growing up in our 20s, and you know she championed Oh My God, What a Complete Aisling from the start, and we just couldn't believe it.
And she's such an amazing example of somebody who has made Irish books, as in, you know, unique Irish humour, go international. So to have her In our corner has been just so incredible.
I was going to say, well, there's quite a few Irish authors that have made it international. Marianne Keyes, Cecilia Hearn.
Yeah, but we land as Vincent scholars, yeah, you know?
We find our names mentioned now in the same sentences as these women, and it's just so exciting. Like,
it makes me gasp every time.
Yeah, we can't believe it.
My last question is always about music, because I always think that music and travel go hand in hand. And I will ask each of you in turn. Well, actually, you might have the same song. It might be on a joint travel thing. But if you had to choose one song that reminds you of a time and place of travel, what would that song be and why?
When we were in that hotel room in San Diego, drinking gin, looking out at the seals, there was you were like, Emer, Sarah, you were like, oh, you have to listen to this song. It's really good. And it was that Rill
Oh, Sleigh Bells. Yeah. And we put it on repeat. We drank, I think, a bottle of gin and put Sleigh Bells, Rill on repeat. And that same trip, I remember listening to Florence and the Machine, Shake It Out.
Yeah, that had just come out.
And I had visited Sarah just to kind of get away from some stressful stuff at home. And I remember driving around Phoenix, listening to that and thinking, oh, this is such a breath of fresh air. So whenever I hear that, I always think of it.
Well, you two are a breath of fresh air.
Thank you.
I'll steal that one from you. And thank you so much for coming on the Big Travel Podcast. I can't wait to read the other books and also see the movie. Invite me to the premiere, please.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Emer, for your wonderful humour and a really enjoyable conversation. I can't wait to see what's next for you and indeed Aisling. Thank you so much for listening to the Big Travel Podcast. Next week, we have a very inspirational story from Paralympic swimmer Liz Johnson.